Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna, text number 22. Tatasya kaimkarya malam pritano.
Tatasya kaimkarya
payati angaya ugasenam. Tistanishanam paramesti disne. Nyabodhaya deva nidharayati. Word for translation. Tat. Therefore. Tasya. His. Kainkaryam. Service. Alam, of course, Bhitan, the servitors, na, us, Viklapayati, gives pain, Anga, O Vidura, Yad, as much as, Ugrasenam, unto King Ugrasen, Tistam, being seated, Nishanam, waiting upon him. Paramesti Disne, on the royal throne. Nyabodayat, submitted. Deva, addressing my Lord. Nidharaya, please know it. Iti, thus. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace to the A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, O Vidura, does it not pain us, His servitors, when we remember that He, Lord Krishna, used to stand before King Ugrasen, who was sitting on the royal throne, and used to submit explanations before Him, saying, O my Lord, please let it be known to you. Purport. Lord Krishna's gentle behavior before his so-called superiors, such as his father, grandfather, and elder brother, his amiable behavior with his so-called wives, friends, and contemporaries, his behavior as a child before his mother Yashoda, and his naughty dealings with his young girlfriends cannot bewilder a pure devotee like Uddhava. Others who are not devotees are bewildered by such behavior of the Lord, who acted just like a human being. This bewilderment is explained by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita 9:11 as follows. Abhajananti man mudha manusimtanam ashritam param bhavam ajananto mamabhuta maheshwaram. Persons with a profound of knowledge belittle the personality of Godhead Lord Krishna, not knowing His exalted position as the Lord of everything. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has explained His position clearly, but the demonic atheistic student squeezes out an interpretation to suit his own purpose and misleads unfortunate followers into the same mentality. Such unfortunate persons merely pick up some slogans from the great book of knowledge, but are unable to estimate the Lord as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pure devotees like Uddhava, however, are never misled by such atheistic opportunists. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Ajnana Jana Shalakaya Chakshumunitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Vitala Isram Upakadam Lam Tadadu Sakurantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nangaite Girmya Kripata Baham Vande Shri Gurundina Tarinam Vansha Kalpa Trivishcha Kripa Sindhubya Eva Cha Patitanam Bhavni Bir Vaishnava Vyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Hare. So we're continuing with remembrances of Lord Krishna. And this, of course, is happening between, these are Uddhava's remembrances of Lord Krishna. And how in the previous text we were reading about the different types of ecstasies, that I think last week when I was reading the verse speaking about the external symptoms that Uddhava would experience by hearing or just by remembering the pastimes of Krishna. And also it would take us, of course, to a point where we understand that at some point Lord Krishna had sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to deliver a message to the gopis as a way to get Uddhava to see the different levels of attachment and love that the residents of Vrindavan had for him. So in this way, this aggravated at this point a situation where Uddhava himself is thinking about all these pastimes that Krishna had performed, whether it's with his superiors, his friends, his mother, his father, like that. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada opens it, of course, by explaining how Krishna behaves differently with his devotees. Last week we also spoke about the Krishna's personality in relation to how Srila Rupa Goswami explained him to be Dira Lalita, Dira Prasanta, Dira Udata, etc. And how all these, how Krishna's personality would fit in to the different relationships he has in perfection. So in each and every single pastime that Krishna exhibits, he is expressing his personality, whether it's with the demons or with his devotees. And later on, we'll hear more examples about how Krishna's mercy even extended to persons who were very inimical. Yesterday we heard about Shishupal, of course, and how he was very envious of the Lord and how he would speak so much blasphemy against the Lord and how the Lord tolerated all that to a certain point, of course, and still gave him the opportunity to merge into his body and bless him in that way. And later on we'll hear about personalities like Putana, etc., and how the Lord would also reward Putana as a sure sign of one of the aspects of Krishna's mercy in his dealings with different personalities. So here, Prabhupada makes a strong emphasis about how those who are not devotees of Krishna, those who do not accept Krishna's dealings or Krishna's personality as being beyond the influence of the modes of material nature, cannot actually understand all these different characters that Krishna portrays with his devotees, whether it's submission to his superiors, whether it's friendliness with those he sees as his equals, and the mercy and compassion he shows to those who are younger than him. So it becomes tricky from a materialistic vision for persons to actually accept, after all these facts, that Krishna is actually the supreme, he is Parabrahman, that he's the original person, and that he appears by his internal pleasure potency. When the conditioned soul, of course, appears in material existence, we're not appearing out of our own internal potency. We are thrusted into these, into the womb of material existence, of course, based on our previous desires, how we want to express those desires and how we have to reap the rewards of the karmic actions that we have performed before. Whereas the Lord, he appears by his own desire, by his own will, in his original transcendental form. So when one is clouded by the duality that is created by the three modes of material nature, it is difficult to see Krishna as being aloof or as being more than just an extraordinary person. So sometimes even we might hear different persons speak about different devatas as them being supreme, whether it's Brahma or Shiva or Ganesh, Saraswati, etc. And they just still see Krishna as a very extraordinary, strong person or as a very powerful person, not actually understanding that Krishna's behavior is the topmost. He is the cause of everything, spiritual and material, and there's nothing beyond him. No one can compete with Krishna to any degree. So all his behaviors in different relationships is not only extraordinary, but is also something that is difficult to digest for someone who has no bhakti towards him, for someone who doesn't have a cordial or an advantageous situation to trying to understand him. Now, Srila Prabhupada classifies these persons by quoting a verse from the Bhagavad Gita 9:11. And I will go through some points to make us understand why these persons are being seen as foolish. Not only these persons who lead such a way of thinking, but also those who even follow their example. So Srila Prabhupada, in the chapter entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge, Prabhupada has quoted this verse, Avajananti Man Mudha. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is speaking very lengthy. It's about 2.5, almost 3 pages long, where Srila Prabhupada first establishes not only from this verse that's quoted in Bhagavad Gita, but also speaks a verse from the Brahma Samhita explaining how Krishna is the original form, how he's the controller, he is the Ishvara. Prabhupada speaks how, just like in a government or in an organization, there's so many little controllers, just as a king has his ministers, you know, members of the clergy, the council, etc. These are all his different energies controlling different aspects of the organization. However, there's always the original, there's always the fountainhead from which everything is coming from, the energy and the potency for all other things to actually go on and become created and manipulated. There has to be that original spark or that original candle. And that in the Brahma Samhita, of course, it is explaining that that is Krishna. Cross-referencing, of course, would be Srimad Bhagavatam, which explains Ete Chamsa Kalapumsam Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, that the form of Krishna, the Swayam Bhagavan form of Krishna, is the original form of the Absolute Truth, the two-handed form of Krishna. That is the original form that even all the Narayans and Vishnu are coming from him. So when trying to understand this aspect of Krishna being Ishvara, the controller, in the Brahma Samhita, of course, Lord Brahma is praising his guru, explaining that he is the ultimate controller of all things, whether they be moving or non-moving. He is the controller. So even in his aspect of time, Krishna is also, that controlling aspect is noticeable in material existence. Of course, in the spiritual realm, time is conspicuous by its absence, but we have all these different seasons, the different fragrances, the different times of fruits to ripen, flowers to open up. This is all accordingly happening based on Krishna's pastimes and how he wants to have loving exchanges with his devotees. So the time factor in the spiritual realm, of course, does not deplete, or it doesn't degrade the pastimes of Krishna, or it doesn't degrade anything at all. In the material realm, of course, time is a diminishing factor. It takes away one's youth, it takes away one's luster, one's vitality, one's memory. Time has a very deprecating effect in the material sphere. However, Krishna is not susceptible to such implications of time. He is the controller of time, so he cannot be bound as he controls that very same aspect of existence. So part of being the Ishvara is that Krishna is the ultimate controller of all things spiritual and material. Therefore, no one can actually become equal or superior to him. He controls the three Vishnus and the energies that they're manipulating, or the energies that they're given control over. And he shows rulership over his devotees, beginning from the topmost devotees, whether it's the gopis or the Lakshmis, the different goddesses of fortune, or the different expansions or angas of the Supreme Lord. And he is praised in all different types of Vedic texts as being supreme, whether it's the Gopaltapan Upanishad, or whether it's the Mundaka Upanishad, the Chandogya Upanishads, the lengthy verses explaining the originality of the Absolute Truth being at the lotus feet of Krishna. So because he is also the controller of everything, he is designated also as Parama, right? Supreme, very, very similar in explanation, that he's the Lord who possesses the most excellent shaktis, right? The most excellent energies. And these are also explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam in terms of his, you know, his tatastha, his marginal energies, his external energy, and his internal pleasure potency. So it is explained in that form that the Supreme Lord is the controller of all things, ultimate controller of all things, living or non-moving or non-moving. So he is the basis of Brahman. Brahman, since he's the basis, the living entity is also referred to as Brahman. Material nature is also referred to as Brahman, in the sense of the structure of the material energy, the living entities. Material nature itself is eternal because these are energies of Krishna. So although time is cyclic in the material world, the yugas are going on in cyclic mode. So at the time of destruction or annihilation, everything is wound up into the body of the Lord. And when the time is fit, once again, the living entities are thrown back into the material sphere so that they can continue with their material desires, etc. So it is the Lord who is the basis of all these energies. Brahmanahi Pratishtoham. This is a verse normally quoted to explain how the Lord is the basis of Brahman. And that in the Gopala Tapani Upanishad, it is also explained how the Supreme Brahman is the cowherd boy Krishna. Yoso Parma Brahman Gopala. So in every essence, the fact that Krishna is seen in the different Vedic texts as being superior in terms of his controlling factor in the material sphere as time, his controlling factor as being the basis of all Brahman, being the source of all different types of energies, then such a person, of course, is not and cannot be subjected to the modes of material nature like any conditioned soul. So Krishna is not an ordinary personality. He's not a common man. He's even not an extraordinary personality. He's beyond all these explanations. Krishna is supremely great and supremely munificent. So all his actions are incomparable to any living entity in creation. So whether Krishna shows submissiveness to his superiors, earlier on we heard how he was lamenting, him and Lord Balaram were lamenting to his parents that they did not give them due time to grow in their presence out of fear of Kamsa. And in that example, we explained how this was done in relationship but in reciprocation to the love his parents felt for him. So Krishna allowed himself to be controlled by that love, that unmotivated love that came from his parents. How Krishna would test Vasudev by falling into the waters of the Yamuna to see the divine madness that his father would go into in fear of losing his child. So Krishna going along to reciprocate with the emotions and the sentiments of his devotees is something that to the materialist or to someone who has no concept of the supreme potency of the Lord is difficult for them to understand. So Srila Prabhupada, in this purport, in the 11th text of the 9th chapter explains this very point that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is confirmed as being Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha, that he is beyond all these dualities. He is not a human being and he's not a common man. He is the absolute truth himself, appearing in different forms and manifesting different types of relationships, primary and secondary, accordingly. And then Prabhupada goes on to explain that there are many little controllers, there are many Ishvaras, and he gives the example of the president and how he has his persons working on his behalf, etc. But at the end of the day, everyone knows who the president is, or everyone knows who the CEO is. There is no confusion about that. However, in the conditioned sphere of existence, due to our envy and due to the mode of ignorance covering our true identity, we fail to recognize that the absolute truth can reside only in one personality. It is difficult for the conditioned soul to accept superiority from just one person. How is it possible that this cowherd boy, this Krishna, can be the absolute truth and at the same time he can be the friend of the gopas and the gopis, at the same time he's maintaining everything by his Brahman effulgence, everything is kept in orbit, and at the same time he is the controller of the creation, maintenance and destruction. How can one person possibly do all these things? This is questions that will arise when one looks at Krishna from a materialistic vision, from a vision that's being compared to a normal human being. So Krishna cannot be compared to any common man because his actions speak for themselves. His actions are actually out of this world. So it takes great learning and purification to actually see and understand the personality of Krishna. To a non-believer, of course, Krishna's actions, Krishna's personality is bewildering. Hence, Prabhupada is quoting this verse. Even just by looking at Krishna's pastimes, how he would bow down to King Ugrasen, or how he would submit himself to Maharaj Yudhisthira, how he will come on the battlefield and have darshan of Bhishmadev as he's about to leave, it may spark a question mark in the hearts of general populace and think, if he is the Supreme Personality, why is he acting like a subordinate? Why is he acting like a second class when he's the topmost personality? No one is above him. Why does he behave like King Ugrasen or Yudhisthira Maharaj is superior than him? But never forgetting that Krishna is a person, he has personality, and his personality manifests depending on who he is reciprocating with. So when Krishna reciprocates with his friends or with his enemies, the outcome will become different. Just as we as persons, we reciprocate with different personalities. With close friends, we act a certain way, we speak a certain way. With our superiors, we're meant to behave a certain way and act a certain way. But in Kali Yuga, even that becomes difficult. There's no respect for superiors. But in a normal civilization, in a human civilization, there are behaviors and there are etiquettes that are to be followed. And the Supreme Lord himself sets an example as to how to deal with seniors, how to deal with juniors, how to show respect, although he himself is beyond all of these things, being the Supreme Person. But still he acts and teaches by example because he knows he can become criticized and be scrutinized for his behavior, especially when dealing with kings, when dealing with Rajarishis. So Krishna was always acting in the proper way. So Srila Prabhupada explains that material bodies are not able to perform the actions that Krishna would perform. Material bodies do not have the eternal, blissful aspect and knowledgeable aspect about every single phase of life. When one is conditioned by their material body and their designation, it is nearly impossible to express or perform wonderful acts, because material body means there's limitations. There's limitations of time, there's limitations of opulence, there's limitations of potency that we can exhibit. One who possesses all opulences, that is Krishna. The maintainer, the possessor of all these opulences, and he's the one who knows how to handle these opulences properly. Even if, or even when the conditioned soul has some type of opulence, it is very difficult for the conditioned soul to know how to deal with that opulence. Whether it's wealth, beauty, strength, or renunciation, that opulence sometimes clouds judgment or clouds or contaminates the consciousness of the living entity, producing pride, producing envy, producing anger. And this is because the living entity in their conditioned state doesn't know how to deal with opulences. Whereas a devotee, devotees like Uddhava, the Pandavas, different subclasses or different degrees of devotee, they have so many opulences, yet they know how to handle these opulences. Whether it's renunciation or being very knowledgeable, it doesn't go to their head and make them resentful or envious or proud, because they're understanding these opulences are coming by Krishna's mercy and they're only to be used in Krishna's service. That is the proper and the best use of the opulences that we get given by the Lord. But if these opulences are not being used in the connection, in the proper yoga between the living entity, the parcel, and its part and parcel, then it is not in its proper use. Then it creates havoc in society. Just as we see when man has control over wealth, or beauty, or fame, the result always ends in some uncomfortable situation, whether it's war, whether it's exploitation, deceit, malice, illusion, madness. These are the results of having some opulence and not using the opulence in its proper way that it should be used in. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining that persons who become bewildered by the personality of Krishna, despite the fact that Krishna's body is transcendental, even when he descends into this material sphere, they just see him as an ordinary man. They see Krishna as an ordinary personality. So Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, he is explaining that these type of persons, they are very foolish. Their mentality is very foolish. They do not know the great wonder of Krishna's appearance in itself, or to speak of Krishna's pastimes. Krishna's birth in itself is something that is very marvelous, and still, you know, great scholars and great theologians are still trying to understand Krishna's birth. He went from here to there, then he went back there, then he was running away, then he was fighting wars, then he was a messenger, then he was a chariot driver, and then he got married, and then he went back, and then he got shot in the foot and died. Right, so what you speak of Krishna's pastimes, his birth in itself is so confusing to mundane eyes and mundane ears. So coming into contact and hearing discussions from the pure devotees, those who have already accepted the authority of Krishna, we become purified and it becomes easier for us to understand the supremacy of Krishna in all his different ways he manifests different types of relationships. So it's not that we accept everything blindly, but we hear about Krishna's pastimes. And as Krishna is in the heart, as the super soul, directing all the wanderings of the living entities and giving knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness, when we get purified, Krishna gives us the remembrance that is required to understand who he is and accept his pastimes in totality. So it is said that we take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet because he has all the transcendental qualifications, because he himself is beyond matter. He is beyond duality. So the living entities surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. So it is impossible that someone who awards liberation can get affected by those things that bind one and do not allow one to get liberation. So Krishna is not bound by the modes of material nature. Krishna is always beyond the three modes. Krishna is always beyond the three sufferings, Adi Atmika, Adi Bhautika, Adi Devika. Krishna is beyond these things. He's the one who liberates us from all these different ways of suffering. So it is not possible for him to become attached or attached to the modes of material nature. Krishna is pure goodness. He's not even on the mode of goodness. He's pure goodness. He's transcendental. So those who think Krishna gets affected by the modes of material nature is greatly mistaken. He is the only one who can actually liberate one from the three modes of material nature. Therefore, he cannot be bound by them. Just as when you save someone from drowning, you yourself have to be on a safe shore. You have to be already saved to save another person. So Krishna is never at any point actually attacked by the modes of material nature or any material energy. Therefore, he alone stands as supreme. He alone stands as the Parabrahman. His planet stands as being the topmost. So all his actions, all his activities are beyond the modes of material nature. So there are many impersonalists. There are many groups of persons who do not accept Krishna's himself being the supreme absolute truth because he descended to the material world and he displayed so-called human-like pastimes. But they do not understand that Krishna's very birth, he appeared in his original transcendental form by his own pleasure potency. He was not put in a womb and then dependent on his previous karma. He would take on a certain type of ear, a certain type of nose, a certain type of mouth. As Bhagavad Gita explained, the living entity is put into the womb of a certain mother, and due to the modes that he is associated with, he develops a certain type of physique. But Krishna is not like that. Krishna is always Sachidananda Vigraha, even when he descends into the material sphere. So the devotee who gradually moves from the neophyte level up to the topmost level of understanding with knowledge the supremacy of Krishna will not get illusioned by the impersonalist view of Krishna being just a common man, none different from me and you. This is a big mistake that actually hampers progress on the path of bhakti. So it is important that we make clear distinctions, just as Uddhava here, so many times we're hearing about Krishna's pastime in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, in the middle, and towards the end, where we hear about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan as a way for us to try and see and conglomerate in our consciousness that Krishna's actions altogether, beginning from creation, maintenance, protection, up to where he's offering shelter to his devotees. These are all activities on the transcendental platform. They're not activities on a mundane platform. So they are incomparable to the activities of a conditioned soul. A conditioned soul is one who acts under the grip and under the ropes of the three modes of material nature. So their actions are very limited. The actions are conditioned. And Krishna is never bound by any ropes. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. So I'll stop there, and I'll read the translation again, and I'll ask for any comments, questions, or corrections. Therefore, O Vidura, does it not pain us, his servitors, when we remember that he, Lord Krishna, used to stand before King Ugrasen, who was sitting on the royal throne and used to submit explanations before him, saying, "Oh my Lord, please let it be known to you." Any comments or questions? We can be doing full-time devotional service. How do we come over, or how do we feed these things? I was mentioning anger, pride, envy, lust, whatever, when we're doing full-time devotional service. So every day we're trying to serve Krishna, and at the same time these lower tendencies come up. That's the gist of it, right? So sometimes we can externally be doing things, but with the internal mood. So when we perform devotional service, that's why reading Prabhupada's books is very important, because we have to understand why we're actually serving. In the beginning, sometimes it feels very much mechanical. I have to do this because it's on my roster, or so-and-so told me to do it. But when we mature and we develop, or when we work on our service attitude, we understand this is pleasing to Krishna. So whatever service I get given, I try to do it with that mentality that I want to do it to please Krishna. Whether it's my most favorite service or my least favorite service, at the end of the day, devotional service should be favorable and pleasing to Krishna. So sometimes we might feel a bit angry, or we get proud when doing a service because we do it very nicely. But when we read Prabhupada books, we understand that all that intelligence and the enthusiasm to do it, of course, we endeavor on our part, but we get a lot of mercy from Krishna to actually perform his service nicely. You know, there's that verse that explains how Krishna gives, knowledge, he gives forgetfulness, he gives us the intelligence of how to act. So even to forget, we require Krishna's energy. We need some rajgun thrown in our face to be forgetful and to be down and deeply drenched in the most immature nature. So on a daily basis, how do we deal with these things? We have to educate ourselves first on why we're performing devotional service, understanding what our mood of service should be. That we're trying to serve Krishna on the sadhana platform, based on a rules and regulated platform, so that we gradually develop the spontaneity after receiving enough purification in the heart and consciousness. We develop our natural love for Krishna, and we'll start whatever service it is, we understand it will be pleasing to Krishna. So on a day-to-day basis, we have to educate ourselves, read Prabhupada's books, and understand why we do service, understand how to identify when we're being affected by the modes of material nature, and how to continue when we see all these things popping up. As you perform devotional service, you might get a little bit lusty here, you might get a little bit proud. But I understand the context that for us to make progress, actually, it's not just our endeavor, but also we're pretty much dependent on Krishna's mercy, and we have to endeavor and show Krishna that we're willing, you know, to make that spiritual advancement. And Krishna will give us the intelligence to know how to navigate through when all these things come up, when our lower tendency come up, we have to get purified. So Krishna will give us the intelligence how to do it. So the trick is that we don't stop performing devotional service, we still continue with our devotional service, but we have to make sure that we lie in a certain boundary. There's a basic boundary Srila Prabhupada gave us of the entire morning program and service that we perform during the day. That is meant to protect us from falling off the rails, so to speak. So if we stick within that boundary, and if when we endeavor with confidence, not that Krishna, I've been chanting for 2 years, therefore, where's my blessing? Right, we just keep going on the track, and Krishna is a big Yaswarat, he's independent, and when the time is perfect and right for us, Krishna reciprocates accordingly. So we just keep going and we keep ourselves within the sadhana boundaries that will protect us from falling prey to the modes of material nature, falling prey to lust, anger, envy, greed, etc. Mahatma Prabhu.
Yes, you shared about envy before. Uh-huh. So why Krishna doesn't like envy?
Why does Krishna not like envy?
Yeah.
Because it's not an attractive quality. It's not an attractive quality. You can't actually dovetail envy. There's a book written, I think it's the book Vaishnavike, which is translated by His Holiness Jayaprakash Goswami. He explains that out of all, you know, these qualities, where, you know, anger, pride, madness, illusion, we can purify those. There's certain ways, according to the bhakti tradition, we can purify these subtle tendencies. But envy is something that we can't purify. We can't dovetail it in Krishna consciousness, right? What we can do is try to become servants of the servant of the servant of the servant. Right, so gradually over time, our pride, which is sometimes pride is being explained as indirect appreciation. Envy is type of similar too. Actually, envy is misdirect appreciation because when we're envious of someone, we want something that they have. We appreciate that quality in them, but it is contaminated because we want it for ourselves. We don't want them to have it. So it is an indirect way of appreciating someone. So we should just appreciate persons directly. We can serve that person. We can encourage that person. That is how we can directly appreciate it. But envy is something that you want someone to stay down. You don't want them to flourish. So, which is the opposite in devotional service, because we're always encouraging, we're always, you know, we're compassionate, we're humble. We don't want the glory for ourselves. We don't have that anxiety to be glorified. We don't really want to be in the front all the time. We want to encourage others. But if you're envious of something or of someone, you don't want to do all these things.
So but you're
well, that's the biggest covering.
Falsing.
The thickest covering.
Because you think you are superior, but actually you are not. That's why you are envious.
No one is superior. If we think we're superior, then we have issues. However, according to etiquette, of course, there are different types of devotees and their mannerisms, and there's rules and of conduct that we follow as Vaishnavas to offer respect to the sannyasi, to the guru, to the grihastha, to the brahmachari, etc. But if we think independently that I am superior because I'm so and so, if we as an individual think that, then it's a contamination. The social distinctions are there for a reason, that we have our etiquette for that. But a devotee never demands respect. Devotees command their respect based on their character, based on the qualities of a devotee that they've developed. So just by your personality, by your devotional service, by your service attitude, you get that command because you're exhibiting the natural qualities of a devotee. Not that you independently work hard to try to get those qualities. They naturally come because you're performing devotional service nicely. Okay, I'm going over time. I have to stop. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.